Well, hey, just one more announcement for you before we jump in. First off, welcome. Glad you're here today. Welcome, welcome, welcome one, welcome all. Welcome to the Brownsboro campus. Welcome to those of you who are online in our three different venues now online. We go on Facebook, we go on Northeast.live, and we're on YouTube as of last week now. So welcome, YouTubers. Welcome, everybody. One more announcement. All right. Check us out. It's Easter season. I don't know if you know that, right? Like Catholics, we call it like Lenten season. It's here, and that's because Easter's coming super early this year. It's Easter falls on April 1st, which is less than a month away. Now, as many of you know, Easter's like one of the couple weekends throughout the year where everybody comes back to church, and our attendance usually doubles on Easter. However, this year Easter falls on spring break, which is a weekend where nobody comes to church. So. We're trying to do a couple things about that in order to make sure that you can still do Easter with your church family. One, we're offering a Thursday night service that week. We'll have our regularly scheduled service times through the weekend, but we're going to offer a Thursday night service for all you who are going to try to sneak out on Friday to wherever you're going, Destin. That's Louisville 2.0, okay? But like we want you to do church with us before you go there. All right. Now, go ahead and carve it in. Now, here's the second thing we're doing. I don't know if you've heard, but this Easter, we are partnering with an organization in our community called Dare to Care, and it is our hope on Resurrection Sunday, a Sunday in which we celebrate the new life of Jesus exploding into the world. It is our hope to give away somewhere around 300,000 meals to the children who are hungry in our city. I couldn't be more thrilled about that. Now, we've kind of worked out the math, and we figured out that for every one person who shows up on Easter, for every one person who sits in a seat, for every one kid in our kids' environment, for every one that shows up, we are going to give away 42 meals. So if you show up on Easter, you will be responsible for the gifting of 42 meals. That's 2 weeks' worth of food to a hungry kid in our city for just showing up for an hour. To Easter. I mean, come on, right? I'm really trying to lay on the guilt here. Okay, here's how we've been saying it. All right, this is actually how I've been saying it. Our marketing team doesn't love it, but I'm going to say it anyways, all right? For every 2 cheeks, we get to feed them for 2 weeks. Repeat after me. 2 cheeks? 2 weeks. You got the message of Easter down, at least for us this year. We want to spread life to the Ville. Now, check this out. With that being said, I want to encourage you to invite your friends, because the more the merrier, right? The more the better. The more people here, the more meals we'll get to give out. On your way out, you'll see these little business-sized cards. You can take as many of these home with you. It's really easy to invite folks with this. You can invite your neighbors or people at the gym or work. On one side, it talks a little bit about our church. The other side, it talks about the 42 meals and our service time. So grab one of those or grab 10 of those on the way out and use them. And then second, if as many people show up as we believe are going to show up, we're going to need a lot of volunteer power, as is the case every Easter. So if you would, attend one and serve one. Or figure out a way to serve the one that you are attending, and let's make this environment as hospitable and as Jesus-like as we possibly can for all the folks coming on our campus for really the only time or maybe the first time in a really, really long time. All right, you can sign up for that on the app right now. In fact, I encourage you, pull out your phones, get on the app, sign up to serve now. Like, ignore the first 3 minutes of my sermon. Father, Son, Holy Ghost, you are forgiven. Okay, now. We've been in a sermon series over the last 3 weeks called The Jesus I Wish You Knew, The Jesus I Wish You Knew. And basically the premise underneath this series is we've just imagined Jesus in three extremely popular, or in my humble opinion, extremely relevant roles of our society that I think we'd all find interesting. In week one, we imagined Jesus as the president, WWJD if he was president, and that was fun. Last week, Mark Moore came in and he imagined Jesus as a doctor in 21st century America. Today, I want to imagine Jesus as an artist. And I know some of you are already rolling your eyes because you're not very artsy and you're like, this sermon's definitely not for me, but it is for you. It's extremely important, really for 2 reasons. One, I believe that our culture right now, perhaps more than anything else, needs subversive art. It needs countercultural, Christ-centered art that rips open the skies and gives people in our culture a glimpse of heaven right here and right now on earth. And you and I are responsible for that. Now, two, I believe that one of the most foundational and fundamental characteristics of the Christian God is that he is, in fact, an artist. And if you don't come to recognize and understand that about God and about Jesus, then you haven't understood and come to know the full Jesus. And you're missing something important about what it means for you to be a human being created in his image. So let me start there today. I got 3 points for you today, and this is the first one. It's a fundamental, foundational truth of Christianity. Jesus is the master artist, period. He is the preeminent creative, the unrivaled innovator. He is the first and great inventor. Jesus is. Now, when I say that, I know there's lots of skeptical people in this room, and so you're wired like me, and immediately, that just sounds spiritual to you. You probably kind of roll in your eyes, and you're like, okay, I get it, Tyler. It sounds all good and well, but that just sounds super spiritual, and I tend to lean away from the spiritual into the scientific. Well, I just want you to know that while this is spiritual, and while this is a fundamental assertion of Christianity, it is based on the very best facts, the very best evidence that both science and philosophy, both the laws of science and the laws of logic have to offer us. Let me explain. Let's start with philosophy. Many, many years ago, even before the time of Jesus, there were philosophers like Plato and Aristotle who put forth this principle called the principle of contingency. Principle of contingency. Check it out. It makes a lot of sense to you. You probably already believe this. The principle of contingency says everything that begins to exist has a cause, right? Every effect has a cause, or said practically, nothing cannot create anything. Rather, something has to create every single thing that exists. Are you with me? So, for example, we're sitting in this building right now. The reason why you're sitting in this building is not because this building is forever. No. It's because about 7 or 8 years ago, we ran out of room in the building across the road. And so some people got together and the people of this church funded it, and we built a new building for us to worship in. And so here you are. And yes, here you are. You too began to exist. You have a starting point. You were created. You want to talk about how you were created? No, I'm just kidding. Not in church, right? Let's just suffice it to say that many decades ago, your parents got together and they fell in love and they called the stork. And 9 months later, there you were. And you began, right? You existed. And that's because everything has a starting point, right? Everything that begins to exist has some cause underneath it. Nothing can't create anything. Rather, something has to create every single thing. Now, you know what science does with the principle of contingency? The very best that science has to offer actually takes this principle and says that it is also true of the universe. The universe has a starting point. In 1929, Edwin Hubble discovered what I believe to be is perhaps the most important discovery in science in the 20th century. He discovered that the universe began to exist. He was sitting in his lab one day in California, looking out of this huge telescope deep into outer space, deeper than anyone had ever looked before. And he noticed two things. One, he noticed the universe was far bigger, far more expansive than anyone had ever imagined. But two, he also noticed that the universe was expanding rapidly. The galaxies were like running away from each other, spreading apart. Now, 100 years later, mathematicians have calculated the rate of expansion in the universe backwards to the starting point of the universe. A singularity, a single ball of energy or point of light or point of matter that exploded into everything that we see. And they've calculated it to be about 15 billion years ago. Now, with that being said, I just want to backtrack on everything that I just said, because this is so huge. People think that we Christians base everything on faith and nothing on the facts. We're just spiritual, right? We are spiritual, but we are also highly scientific. Follow with me, okay? Follow with me. Science tells us, the very best of astronomy, the very best that mathematics has to give us, science tells us that the universe began to exist maybe about 15 billion years ago with a bang, right? Well, philosophy says, if that is in fact true, science, understand, nothing can't create anything. Rather, something had to create everything. There had to be a cause. Something had to pull the trigger and bang the bang. Something had to light the fuse that exploded into everything there is. And so theism comes on top of that. The very best science and the very best philosophy has to offer and says, whatever that is, whatever that uncaused cause is, whatever that force is that pushed the first domino and created the first domino, whatever the intelligent designing mastermind power behind it all is, that's what we call God. And it began with him. Now, even still, even though this premise that God created everything is built on science and philosophy, I understand that many of you in this room still just can't say it because it's like God created everything. It's just so counter to what you've believed for so long. But I want you to consider the other option. Either something created everything or nothing created everything. Now, which sounds more logical to you? Nothing created everything? Like nothing? Tell me about this powerful nothing, please. Where did this nothing come from? Nowhere? What was this nothing doing before it created everything? Nothing? Or something? Because if nothing was doing something, it was not nothing at all. Rather, it's something. Okay, you know what's really hard for me to believe? It's hard for me to believe that once upon a time, a long, long time ago, nothing decided to motivate itself one day and said, I'm gonna do something. No, okay. The idea that nothing created everything, for me, that's pure fantasy. And that takes a whole lot of faith to believe. Now, Christianity takes the whole process just one step further. And it says, okay, well, if God created everything, then that God has a name. And his name is Jesus. And he's the creative behind it all. I would encourage you, if you're a skeptic, to go out there and take all the theistic worldviews there are. Take the major theistic worldviews out there today and just kind of line them up and see which one holds up underneath the weight of science and philosophy and history, psychology, sociology, the best. Which one is the most emotionally and culturally compelling? Which one answers the big questions of life the best? I think you'll find, at least this is what I've found, I think you'll find that Christianity stands up really, really well. And Christianity teaches us that Jesus is the master artist, him. It's all his. He's the preeminent creative, the unrivaled innovator, the first and great inventor. Colossians chapter 1, verse 16 says, for by Jesus all things were created. All of it. It's all his. In heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. John chapter 1. John writes, in the beginning was the Word, and that's just a nickname he had for Jesus. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. And all things were made through him, and there was not one thing that was made without him. Now, I just went through like some intellectually rigorous arguments. And for some of you, you're like eyes glazed over. And it's, okay, wake up for just a second. Because if the best of science and the best of philosophy doesn't provoke your mind, then I just want to encourage you to allow science painted and lived and created in the natural world to provoke beauty and wonder in your heart. I would encourage you today, when you walk out the doors, don't think another second about philosophy. Just pull your face out of a screen and look around at zoology, at botany, at biology, at human anatomy. I mean, it's amazing. Sharp green blades of grass, clear gulf waters, snow-capped mountains, miles in the sky, a pink and orange and purple sunset layered above, a cool spring breeze, the soft glow of a midnight moon, the quake of thunder in the distance. Fish, birds, animals. Man, okay, did you know that there are over 5,000 species of lizards alone? Tastes and sounds and smells and smiles. Look, it's all his, y'all. It's all Jesus's. Creativity and diversity were actually his creation, all right? And he didn't have to gather a focus group. He didn't have to do a demographic study. He didn't have to go out and read a how-to book or get a college degree or phone a friend. No, again, it all came from his mind. Just pure creativity, raw innovation. He is the innovatory God. And you know what I love best? The scriptures tell us that he ain't done. This isn't even his best. Because one day he'll come again, and when he does, he'll bring with him a new heavens and a new earth that are far more compelling, far more beautiful, far more complex than anything we've seen now. We're living in the opening act. This is just a warm-up. He's far more creative than what we can't even understand, what we can't even put words to sometimes when we look around. So look, I said it earlier. Let me say it again. Jesus, and Jesus alone, is the master artist. He is the preeminent creative, the unrivaled innovator, and the first great inventor. And if you consider yourself a creator in any arena or in any role in your life, if you think you're an artist, if you see yourself as innovative or a creative, you understand there is nobody better for you to follow than Jesus, because he's the best in your field. Now that leads me to my second point, and that is this. You should consider yourself as a creative, no matter who you are in the room. All of us, because God has given every single last one of us a creative instinct. Point two, I believe Jesus designed all of us as artists at work. We are all created to be artists at work. We are created to create. Now, there's this preacher who lives out on the West Coast who I've started listening to recently, who I've really come to like. His name's Irwin. And the reason why I like Irwin so much is he's an accomplished preacher, but he's also an accomplished artist. So the way that he like talks about things and looks at things is just different than what I'm used to. He kind of runs in a different lane. Do any of you guys have an artsy friend? Right? Okay, yeah. Some of you are married to him, right? I see that hand right there, Scott. Like you're married to him, and like it's just different. Like the way their brains work is, okay, you wanna know how your friend is, you know, your friend's artsy? Just look at the clothing combinations they're able to put together and pull off. It's like the most treacherous thing you've ever seen, and yet they put it on and you're like, oh, that works, right? They stood in front of the mirror this morning and said, hey, I'm gonna go with the green suede shoes, dark denim on the bottom, light denim on top, fishnet tank top, and oh, don't forget the beanie. You know, can't forget the beanie. Never forget the beanie, right? I mean, if I walked on stage with that outfit, some of you would wonder if the church was paying me enough to afford clothes, right? And yet artsy people are just like, wow, you did it, man. You really did it, okay? Now, that's Irwin for you. Like, I feel like I just described for you the last thing he preached in. So if you get mad about an untucked shirt, you could have Irwin. Now, Irwin wrote this in a book that he wrote recently on art from the Christian worldview, and I thought it was compelling. He said, the most compelling and inspiring art is what he would call authentic art, authentically you art. He writes, art becomes profound when it exposes us and explains us and inspires us. We've all experienced artistic expressions that somehow have left us flat and unmoved. We instinctively know when a film or a painting or a song is essentially soulless. Yet, there is something breathtaking about a work that is genuinely original and authentic to the artist. We may not always have the language to explain it, but somehow we know the difference between art and imitation. And though we may be fooled from time to time, most of us quickly learn to distinguish between art and propaganda. Now, when I read this paragraph and I read the entire section that this paragraph fell within, I pulled out my little Moleskine journal and I wrote this down, because this is what I feel like God was pressing on me. I wrote down that the most inspiring art, your most inspiring art, will always be an expression of your heart and your soul and your mind. And I feel like that is theologically profound. That's good art theology right there. Because Jesus' first great commandment was to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. Perhaps the key word there being your. So when you crack open your heart and you pour out your soul and you exercise your mind to great levels of sophistication and artistry and innovation, understand you are actually worshiping and honoring and loving God on his terms. You are operating in your sweet spot as a species because you are in fact created to create. In Genesis chapter 1, there's this beautiful thing said about humanity. The scriptures tell us we are created in God's image, in God's image. What does that mean? It's profound, but what does it mean? I'll tell you what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean we physically look like God, because the scriptures tell us God is spirit. No, rather, it means that we share some of the most essential characteristics of God. And what characteristic is more prominent when it comes to God in Genesis 1 than his creativity? Look, you were created with just that. That's why it can be so satisfying to create something good or experience an authentic creation of someone else. You are created to be an artist at work. Now, again, I know what some of your pushback is, because it's my pushback. You don't feel artsy, right? You just don't. Okay, I don't feel artsy. I am 100% dude, if you know me. I'm just a dude, okay? Like baseball, burgers, and blue jeans. That's the three B's of dude right there. That's me, 100% dude. And yet, as I reflected on my life this week and I thought, is there avenues that God has given me opportunity to create for him through? I thought to myself, yeah, there's lots of places. Like every weekend, I stand on stage and I present a fresh expression of God's truth that will hopefully inspire you towards Jesus. Every weekend in my home, I try to create an environment that will bring life rather than destroy life. Every weekend, I partner with the staff of this church and all of you who would consider this your church home to create a living entity known as the body of Jesus, known as the local church, that hopefully images Jesus in the world in such a way that we make him famous and not infamous. That's my art. I'm an artist at work. So are you. I have a friend in town who's a master chef. He's here today. His name's Bobby. Love the guy. And I believe that he's got, okay, in my humble opinion, the best restaurant in town. And that's saying something. Because Louisville's a foodie town, right? Now, I went to his restaurant on Tuesday, and I was trying all this stuff on the menu, just plate after plate after plate, and I found myself saying, with everything that was brought out to eat, that is the best, fill in the blank, I've ever had. That's the best pasta I've ever had. That's the best salad I've ever had. That's the best burger. That's the best lamb. Okay, here's how you know that he's a master chef. 90% of the stuff on the menu, I couldn't even pronounce. I want more of the gnocchi, right? I mean, it's like... Some of you will get that. Anyways, some of you are like, it's not pronounced gnocchi? No, it's not. I found it out Tuesday. Now, let's check this out. As he's bringing out each one of these dishes, you could see his passion because he started explaining the heart and the soul and the mind behind each one of them. And I found what he was saying so inspiring. And I started noticing these common themes pop up. So when I went home, since I'm a student of leader, I took out my little journal again, and I wrote down what I believe to be chef's recipe of success is. This is what it is. At least this is what he said. One, he said, in every dish, I respect every ingredient. In a world where food is mass produced and they'll put all sorts of junk in your food in order to make the margins a little bit better, he said, I refuse to do that. I respect God's creation too much. I respect you too much. Two, he said, I want to unleash young potential at my restaurant. In fact, he told me that most of the chefs in his kitchen are in their late teens or early 20s because he believes in the next generation. And three, he said that his desire is to create an experience of culinary wonder anytime people come in, to create an experience where people just say, wow. Where if you had negativity when you walked in the door, you leave it at the door. And it gives way to positivity, where you taste the food and all of a sudden you just find yourself smiling, leaning in and enjoying the moment with the people with you at the table. And if you can do just that, he says, I believe that I can love every single one of my customers. And at the end of the day, love's the end game for them. Just like it should be for you and for me. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that's an artist at work. Don't you see? I got a friend named Lindsay who was, who's had a really good job at a hospital locally. But then she decided to leave her job to take the nurse position at the Westport Tap School, one of our favorite Love the Ville partners down the road. Big life transition for her, right? And if you don't know much about the Westport Tap School, it's beautiful. Like, it's what a wonderful place. It's a school of second chances where they take teenage girls who have unexpected pregnancies and they just help them navigate that season of their life. It would be a really, really easy season for them to check out, right? But they say, no, you're not just gonna check out. You're gonna check in. You're gonna graduate. We're gonna help you raise your kids and you're gonna overachieve while you're at it. We love it. We love that we get to be partners with them. Now, at the end of 1 year of being there, Lindsay came up to us and she was like, you know, when these girls come to the TAP school, they're given an amazing support system. But when they graduate and leave the TAP school, it's almost like as if most of their support system just dissolves out from underneath of them. And I believe that if we could just do like two or three things for these young ladies when they walk out, then we could set them up for success and their kids up for success for many years to come, a lifetime to come. Now, you see what she was doing? One, she was using her giftedness and her experience to imagine a kingdom future and bring that imagination, bring that which is invisible in her mind in the future into the present, to something tangible that we could do to change the world. Now, we haven't figured it all out yet. Probably looks like some sort of ministry or nonprofit. We're working alongside of her, just kind of think through how we might do something like that or who we might bring in with us. It's in the creation stage. But ladies and gentlemen, that's an artist at work. Hey, if you're a teacher in this room, your classroom is your canvas. If you're a parent in this room, particularly a stay-at-home parent, every day you hold the impressionable clay of the next generation in the palms of your hands. If you're a leader of people in this room, okay, hear me now. Your employees are not levers for you to pull in order to advance your career. Rather, you are an artist, a creator of an environment that's supposed to unleash human thriving rather than crush it. crush God's favorite masterpiece, humanity. This is what I'm saying, all right? Hear me, this is so important. Jesus has given the future to us, you and I. The future is our canvas. The paintbrush is in our hands. I wanna challenge you, paint love. With all your heart, with all your soul, and with all of your mind. I mean, isn't that why God created the church? Not to conform to culture, but to create a counter culture, right? Isn't that why he created us? To again, rip open the skies and give people a glimpse of the kingdom of heaven right here on earth. Isn't that why he put us here? Not to be copycats, but to be creatives for him. Here's what makes me sad. What makes me sad is that God has made all of us unique. Yes, even you. You are one of a kind. Did you know that? No one has your DNA. No one has your nature. No one has your nurture, your upbringing, your experiences, your unique God-given giftedness. No, you are the only one like you. God created you special. Now, while that may be true, and that may make all of us feel nice and warm and fuzzy inside, you know what I found? I found that most people spend the majority of their lives trying to shed that uniqueness and just fit in. What a shame. For many of us, our highest hopes and dreams in life is to just make a good living. But what if making a good living has little to do with a paycheck or a house or a couple cars or a vacation, and it has everything to do with actually living the unique life God has created you and only you to live? I believe that's what making a good living is. So look, the past is the past. Can't do much about that except learn from it. But the future is yours. And choice by choice, day by day, decision by decision, you will paint the story of your life. Paint it well. I pray you paint a masterpiece, but not just any masterpiece, a masterpiece of Jesus, because you were created in his image anyways. No, last point, third and final. Jesus didn't just design us as artists at work. He also designed us as works of art. Genesis 1 says we are created in God's image. Now, understand, no other living organism was given that dignity. Not plants, not animals, not fish, just us. We were given that inherent value. We were given that imbued worth. Here's the timeline of creation. Just follow with me, okay, because this is beautiful. On day one, read Genesis 1 later. Day one, God created time and he said it was good. Day two, he created weather and said it was good. Day three, he created food production and plants, said it was good. Day four, the astrological universe, suns, moons, and stars, and it was good. Day five, in the beginning of day six, he created animals, fish, and birds, and he said it was good. But then at the end of day six, he created humanity in his image. And Genesis 1:31 tells us that in that moment, he steps back, surveys creation, and he says something just a little bit different. He says, now it is very good. Because you and I are the crown of his creation. Maybe I could say it to you like this. This is a picture of a mandarin fish. Beautiful little creature. Swims around Australia and the Philippines. It's only about 6 centimeters in length. And the blue pigment you see in its scales there is actually a cellular pigment unique to this species of fish alone. So this is what I'm saying. Jesus, in all his brilliance, created a 6-centimeter fish that most of us will never even see and never even experience in life with a unique cellular pigment. I suppose just because he wanted to show off. And yet you and I are the crown of his creation. This is a picture of the chocolate hills of the Philippines. There are approximately 1,700 of them. And they are an absolute mystery of nature. Because during most of the year, they're lush green. But during the dry season, they start fading into brown. Now, they're about halfway through the fade here. But when they get fully brown, they look like little chocolate drops all over the countryside. It's a natural phenomenon. That's why they're called the chocolate hills. Now, in my humble opinion, I think when Jesus created this, he was dreaming of chocolate. Because chocolate is one of his great creations. But look, at the end of the day, you and I are the crown of his creation. This is a picture of a markhoor. Markhoor is an endangered wild goat that's actually the national animal of Pakistan. And here's what's crazy about him. When they chew their cud, foam falls from their mouth and it dries up on the ground. And then the locals will come later and they'll scoop the foam, the dried foam, off the ground because it's been proven that it has medicinal anti-venom qualities. Their spit heals, kind of like Jesus, right? And is that not amazing to you? I wonder how many scrupulous, minutia kind of like details God has coded into the created world for us to just find out as we take the adventure of life. And yet, you and I are the crown of his creation. This next one's a picture, I just had to give this one to you, of a raccoon dog. Now, they're actually not related to a raccoon. They're an East Asian dog, but they look like raccoons, so they call them the raccoon dog. And while I know most of you would love to take one of these little guys home today, because dogs are man's best friend, we are God's best friend and the crown of his creation. Now, I had to throw this one in there because I love baseball. This is a baseball plant. Okay, and the reason why God created this is because baseball is the greatest sport. There ain't no basketball plant. Ain't no football plant. Just a baseball plant. Now, you don't want to actually touch this plant because it's toxic and it'll break your skin out, but while I love baseball and I know God does too, you and I are the crown of his creation. It's a little bit of a stretch, all right? Now, here's the last one I want to show you. This is a picture of Molokai, Hawaii. The natives say that this is what the world should strive to look like in the future. Because this land is untouched by mass development, the 10-mile-wide island has over 100 miles of shoreline, hidden waterfalls, ancient ruins, and not one single traffic light. And yet, despite its unblemished and raw beauty, you and I are the crown of his creation. And you know how I know that? Because he created us in his image. In his image. And he gave us life. But it didn't stop there, because then he took on himself our image and gave up his life so that we might have a second chance at life. That's why I can look confidently every face in this room and tell you that when I look at you, you know what I see? I see God's image. And I see Jesus' love, because that's what Jesus' story says he gave you. So this season at the Kentucky Center, my wife Lindsay and I bought tickets to all the Broadway shows that are coming through. And I've loved it. So has she. Done it with a couple of our close friends. Been a fun date night about once a month. And the show that recently came through was this brilliant musical called Rent. It's been running for 25 years right now. The soundtrack is just, it's really just brilliant. But I would classify Rent in the genre of tragedy, me personally, because the storyline's tragic. It's a story of a bunch of young people who are friends in poverty, living in New York City sometime during the 80s when the HIV/AIDS epidemic was claiming many lives. And the assumption of the story is that all of them have AIDS. And so all of them know that they're dying. That today could be their last, tomorrow could be their last, or today or tomorrow could be their friend or their lover's last day. So the whole musical is just like this tug of war back and forth between I've got to grasp the moment and show love versus I could die tomorrow. It's a tug of war between love and desperation, death and holding on to life. Now, the framework song that runs throughout the entire musical is this song called No Day But Today. I want to read you lyrics. It is sung, there is no future, there is no past. I live each moment as it's my last. There's only us, there's only this. Forget regret or life is yours to miss. There's only yes, only tonight. We must let go to know what is right. No other course, no other way. No day but today. I can't control my destiny. I trust my soul. My only hope is just to be. Now, when I heard that, it broke my heart. Not because I don't agree with the idea that we should live each moment in love as if it is our last, but because this is a song sung by those who have no eternal hope, whose hope is literally today. There's no future, no destiny, no day but today. My only hope is just to be. And in my time as a pastor, I've met hundreds, thousands of people even who are living right there, who are living in the trenches of pain, who are living in the trenches of suffering, and who have come to believe this about themselves. If that's you, let me tell you, Jesus speaks a better word. He sings over you the songs that we sang earlier. The cross has the final word. The cross has the final word. He gave it all for eternal life. The cross has the final word. The Savior comes with the morning light. The cross has the final word. Oh, the ground began to shake and the stone was rolled away and his reckless love could not be overcome. Now death, where is your sting? Our resurrected King has rendered you defeated forever. That's the word he speaks over you. And I just want you to hear that today. He speaks over you a word of hope. A word of hope about the future that can change who you are in the present. He speaks over you a living hope. And you know, want to know why he can speak that over you? Because he, the creator and master artist of the universe, did not consider the universe as his most prized work of art. He considered you as his most prized work of art. And he traveled the expanse of the universe and he stooped down for you and for me. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if that story is in fact true, then I believe that there is no other response to him other than to stoop down like he did for us and to worship. So right now, let's worship.
Fleshed out the wonder of life. And as you speak, 100 billion galaxies are born in the vapor of your breath, the planets form. If the stars were made, so will I. I can see your heart in everything you made. Every burning star signal fire of grace. Creation sings your praises, so will I. Stars were made to worship, so will I.
on a hill you created, the light of the world abandoned in darkness to die. And as you speak,
so glad that you joined us today. Thank you for being with us. I want to invite you to stand, and we're going to recite our Jesus Creed together, what we've been doing, and it's the truth that unites all of us. Will you read this with me? Jesus is God, our King. He was, he created, and he promised. Then he became, he lived, and he died. For God is love. He rose, he sent, and he ascended. Now he revives, he heals, and he perfects. For Jesus lives in us. God is Jesus, our King. Amen. Hey, thank you for being with us. If you need prayer, if you need to speak with somebody, we have elders and ministers waiting for you in the fireside room right out these doors. If you're new, if you're a guest, we would love the opportunity to meet you and get to know you a little bit. Right through these doors, we have a guest kiosk, and we'd love to meet you there. Otherwise, we love you. Thank you for being with us, and we'll see you next week.